All right. Case number 5. 093386. Robert Baldiroux versus Eric Holder, Jr. Good morning, Mr. Gerber.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it may please this honorable court, I'm Malcolm Gerber. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Robert Baldiroux, who is asking this honorable court to review decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals denying his application or motion to reconsider the board's denial of his motion to reopen his removal or deportation proceedings that occurred back in 1988. I think the facts are pretty straightforward, with the exception of one issue or a number of issues. The board, their decisions, both the initial motion to reopen as well as the motion to deny reconsideration, failed and unequivocally did not address at any point any of the facts pertinent to reaching a decision. The board says in its case, in the cases, that exceptional circumstance or a mistake of material fact or change in law may give rise to a motion. In here, in this matter, there was a material change in circumstances with regard to Mr. Baldiroux since 1988, when the original order was entered.
Mr. Gerber.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the board fail to consider the change in circumstances in law, or did it consider it but determine that Mr. Baldiroux failed for, you know, years to act on opportunities to obtain legal status, and therefore that the circumstances didn't warrant reopening? Which is it?
Judge, good question, because the board doesn't state upon which basis they have made their made a decision. They do not address his marriage. They do say that there was a visa available to him that upon filing, which was error. His wife, when she initially filed for him for an immigrant visa to the United States subsequent to the order of deportation, was a lawful permanent resident. In that time, there was a waiting period for the availability of the visa, I believe, of close to 4 years. Now, that subsequently changed when his wife naturalized in the year 2000. The visa initially for second preference family, spouse of a citizen, became available to him in 1995. However, at that time, I believe his wife was pregnant and ready to give birth. And it wasn't as simple as go back to your native country, pick up your visa, and return.
But could you have, well, yeah, of course. But could he have gone back the next year?
No, ma'am. Well, he was confronted with a provision that existed prior to April 1st, 1997, and that if you are ordered removed from the United States, you are subject to a 5-year bar to return to the United States. Now, there is a waiver if you can establish to the satisfaction at that time of the Immigration and Naturalization Service that your spouse would be subjected to an extreme hardship, they may consider a waiver. But you are overseas. He was engaged in a business at that time. He was an employee with another, with a company. His wife gave birth, and he went on for there. Now, in 2000, she became a citizen, which changed his visa classification to that of an immediate relative. Also, in 2000, Congress did pass NACARA, and NACARA had a provision in there that a individual who had filed for asylum, which he had done back, I believe, in 1986, may have the opportunity of filing one motion as the citizen of a former member of the Soviet Union.
Can I ask you a question? How long have you been representing him?
Judge, it goes back to 2000.
Okay.
I was the counsel.
This case is probably about as sympathetic as you can get. You know. There's procedurally, he's literally missed the boat all along the way, and it's frustrating because how are we going to turn this around without doing something that we don't have jurisdiction or authority to do? The BIA isn't doing it. They missed it. Sympathetically, everything. His family's here. He's got a sick father. He's got a business. Everything's great. He's the kind of an immigrant we'd love to have compared to some of the others that are crashing.
But the BIA...
So what do we do?
Right. Your Honor, the BIA has found instances similar to this that we, in fact, cited where they did exercise their authority, if you will, and granted relief.
So how do we force feed that?
I believe, very frankly, Judge, if you read the decision of the BIA, it does not address any of these material changes of fact. It ignores it. It says there's no substantial change in the man's life, which flies in the face of the record. This was, in fact, it borders on being arbitrary and capricious in light of the precedent established by the BIA when they had granted relief. And similar to those cases, yes, this is a very sympathetic case. That's why we're here today. His wife can no longer work. She's solely dependent on him. He has had no law enforcement contact other than his contacts with the service here. And the record is clear in these proceedings. He was released from ICE custody, placed on supervised release. Give us a telephone call once a month. Come in and see us once a month. Not viewed as a danger to society. This court has heard other cases where there could be a substantial question as to an individual's character. Here there is not.
Counsel,
aren't
there a legion of individuals in the same condition, though, that if the court adopts that as a standard for action, perhaps this court or many courts would be inundated with individuals with just as troubling situations as this litigant?
Your Honor, I don't think, very frankly, that we should be disturbed by having or looking at doing the right thing. I believe historically this country has been based on that. The United States Supreme Court on the 31st of this year, March of 31st of this year, handed down Padilla versus Kentucky, dealing with incompetent assistance of counsel and guilty pleas in criminal cases. I don't think that looking at it and saying, well, yes, there are legions of individuals that may be in the same circumstances, but we're a country that's primarily prided ourselves on addressing our issues. If you look at this as a social issue, it is a social issue. We have individuals that are here. The government did not move to execute this warrant of deportation for 20-some years. Not in a record, but he was turned in by his business partner because they had a business disagreement. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened? He would still be here. And every year since 2007, Congress has been dealing with changes in the law that would offer this man relief.
Save some time, please.
Your Honor, I respectfully submit that the board erred in its decision to the point that the decision should be vacated, it should be remanded. The board should reconsider this in light of the facts as they stand that they never addressed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Begay?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Sherry Begay on behalf of the Attorney General. The single issue before the Court today is whether the Board abuses discretion when it denied petitioner's motion to reconsider.
When the government waits so long to enforce a deportation order, that a person's circumstances have changed so drastically, such as happened here, why shouldn't that weigh in favor of reopening?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, I inquired with the Department of Homeland Security to find out more about what exactly happened with his removal. And in right after the in absentia order of removal was upheld by the board in 1991, there was a letter sent to him to show up for removal. But at the time, he had changed his address, and the letter was returned to Homeland Security. So they attempted again to find out where he is, but again, he had not showed up at the hearing. They did not have his most recent address. And later on, again in 2008, they did attempt to remove him, but they did not have valid travel documents. And the obtaining of travel documents are prioritized for people who are detained. And in this case, the petitioner was not detained. So he was released under a supervised program. And he did have notice as of 1995 that, at least as of 1995, that there was a removal order against him. But again, neither he left and nor was the Homeland Security able to obtain travel document in this case. So there were several attempts to remove him, and it wasn't that they just simply did not act on it.
If Mr. Bolderoo was unaware that his prior attorney had filed a BIA appeal, how would he have known that the Life Act motion had to be filed before the board? Was there any avenue available to him to file his Life Act motion at the time that it was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction and the time period had elapsed? All right. In other words, let's see. If he had filed it at that late time with the board, would it have been accepted, or in the alternative, could he have appealed the initial jurisdictional denial?
If he had filed it with the board, could he have appealed that? I believe he could have. At the time that he, well, first I'd like to address his claim that he did not know about the appeal of the judge's decision. In this case, there was no, in this case, his original attorney, there was no complaint ever filed against him or anything of the sort, so I'm not quite sure. Assuming he wasn't aware of this, he could have tried to file this with the board after it was dismissed by the Immigration Court, but the problem in this case was that he had waited 7 years before raising this issue in his motion to reconsider. And the main thing is that he could have tried to do something earlier. He was represented throughout this entire period by an attorney. And what the board tried to do was to look back and see if there was any way that, you know, if he had acted on this, then possibly the case could have been reopened. But the fact that he waited 7 years and didn't do anything, I mean, that certainly hurt his case. So that was the problem here, was that there was simply no action after it was dismissed.
So, but wait a minute. Was there an avenue for relief available? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, that's an issue that, well, if he had filed it with the board, perhaps there may have been at that point.
Well, he's unaware that his prior attorney filed. I mean, this is Alice in Wonderland time,
yes,
again.
No, I understand. And, you know, certainly it is a sympathetic case here. And
I know, I feel sorry for you.
Well, you know, the problem with this case is simply that, you know, he had this original decision. He didn't seek review of it, the in absentia order of removal when it was upheld, and then he didn't seek review of the board's denial of the motion to reopen.
But he didn't know. But he doesn't know about it.
Of the denial of the motion to reopen?
Does he?
That was actually denied in 2008. And he did
know.
Well,
here he is. It's only 2010.
Correct.
Well, I mean when if there was no avenue for relief available, why shouldn't that weigh heavily in favor of reopening? Because otherwise, the purpose of the Life Act amendments are completely thwarted.
Correct. Well, see, essentially, the board's motion to reopen this case, I mean, that's not before the court here because, again, he didn't seek review, and also it was a sua sponte discretionary decision. So the only thing the court is reviewing here is the denial of reconsideration, which in this particular case, we have to look to what was raised in the motion to reconsider. And, of course, he did raise the dismissal of his special motion to reopen. He did raise that. And he also raised the approved visa petition.
So what happens to Mr. Baldurou? He's sent back?
Well, at this point, you know, he certainly, I mean, he has a, his wife is a U.S. citizen and
his wife what?
His wife is a U.S. citizen,
right.
And his father. There are other avenues for him to pursue.
Like what?
Relief. Well, he could try to apply for a visa and then get a waiver to come back. But
5 years?
I think it depends. I'm not sure if it's exactly 5 years, but he would have to consult with his attorney. But there are other avenues for him to come back because he does have... He does have U.S. citizens.
Like for visits? For 3 months
at
a time?
To return. I believe that there are other avenues. He would have to pursue that further with his attorney. But I'm not sure if that visa petition is available to him still. That's something that I'm not quite sure of. But, again, the main thing that I would just like to state before the court here is that in its denial of reconsideration, the board addressed everything that was raised by the petitioner. And the problem was that the petitioner had to point to some type of error and in the denial of the motion to reopen. And the board didn't see anything wrong with its prior decision. And certainly there wasn't any error on the board's part when it denied the motion to reopen because it was untimely and there were no exceptional circumstances simply because of the long waiting period. He relied on the 1993 notice from the State Department as proof of the approval of the visa petition. But again, that would have meant that he waited 17 years before acting on it. So that was what the board looked at in its denial of the motion to reopen. And then in the denial of the reconsideration, it went back and looked at whether it properly evaluated the case and denied it. So that's...
Is there a presumption that he's just purposely avoiding coming back or raising his head or trying to realize if he just does nothing, maybe he can just continue to stay? Are they assuming it's something like that?
I'm not sure if they're assuming that, but, you know, there's indication that, you know, he did have no...
Deliberate avoidance, I guess, is one way to put it.
Well, the board never, you know, found that he deliberately was avoiding anything.
Well, you
but
said something about he was represented by counsel.
That's the thing that, you know, he was represented the whole time. He did have notice. And that's simply the problem here is that there was just so much time that passed. And
he missed a lot of opportunities? Is that what
exactly. He could have acted much earlier. So this is what the board
was
looking
at. The government could have acted much earlier, too.
Certainly.
And so don't we weigh the great, huge government against Mr. Baldurou with his sick father, his sick wife, his children, his business, his life?
Of course. And certainly it is a sympathetic case here. I completely agree with that. And, the government, I did ask, as I told you, I did ask regarding the removal, and there were several attempts. But, again, you know, He was never detained. He certainly wasn't a danger to the community, which is why his case was not a priority in terms of obtaining travel documents. So that's why, you know, this time he was not immediately removed, and he's under supervision, supervised release. So that's essentially why the government did not act earlier on this case. But, you know, again, it's the only thing that's before the court here is the denial of reconsideration, just because the underlying decisions were not appealed. So the court does not have jurisdiction over the merits of those decisions. And, again, we're only considering whether or not there was an abuse of discretion. And it's evident from the board's decision that it did consider its prior decision adequately, and it did not find that it erred in declining to reopen the case. If there are no further questions, for the foregoing reasons, the board did not abuse its discretion in the denial of reconsideration, and the court should deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Begay. Mr. Gerber, I'm going to give you a couple of moments.
Your Honor, if I may, first, with regard to the Section 1501 motion, that's the Life Act motion, that was not adjudicated. It was rejected by the clerk of court. There could be no appeal. You can only appeal an order of an IJ, an immigration judge, to the BIA, not a rejection from a clerk of court. So we were stopped.
To reject the filing of it, you're saying?
Yes, because of the unknown appeal. With regard to determination of did this appeal exist, in the world of immigration, the records are not public. I would have to rely, or any counsel would have to rely, on filing a Freedom of Information Act request. You go back to the year 2000, and I am willing to represent and stake my reputation on it. It took 2 years to get a reply from a Freedom of Information Act request from the government, so we'd have the complete record. As far as the... So it wasn't dismissed by a judge. Okay? It was barred then with respect to the law. Today, after April the 1st of 1997, Mr. Baldaru is confronted with a 10-year bar to returning to the United States on two grounds. One, in the United States, for papers too long, more than 1 year. That's Section 212C9, I believe, or 9C, 2 years without having his dad.
That's why he couldn't go over and get his visa. Because
exactly. These are bars that were placed in front, if you will, where he could. Did he hide? No, he did not hide. They could never find him. My father worked for the government. He was an assistant U.S. attorney. He had a very favorite saying: "You could go to Las Vegas on the weekend, come home, and Monday morning, the government will tell you what you had in your suitcase." Never walked in your hotel room and never walked into your home. They could find them anytime they wanted them. They are a law enforcement agency. They gave it a low priority. The man has been here. He's now a principal in a business. But they never discussed the underlying facts in reaching their decision to deny. They just said no. But there was case precedent that said, under these circumstances, yes, it is warranted. Virtually identical to his. They ignored their own precedent, and for cases where time had also gone by. The man has been stopped in proceedings here. And this case definitely warrants the exercise of discretion. I thank the court very much.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Thank you. Gerber, I'm sorry. Mr. Gerber, and thank you, Ms. Begay. The case will be taken under advisement.